Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call in to order the Senate Judiciary Committee. I apologize for the delay. We're still waiting for the amendments to come in. We have one other piece of legislation that we need to take care of, which is a work session on Senate Bill 380. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the work session on Senate Bill 380. Council?
Senate Bill 380 allows an expert witness in a criminal trial to testify via simultaneous electronic transmission if both parties consent. We first heard this on February 25th. There is no expenditure impact and no revenue impact.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 380 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 380 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions or discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And
I think I'm next, Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist will be our carrier on this. Thank you very much. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 380. I'm going to go ahead and open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 570, asking the two representatives, Tina Kotak and Nancy Nathanson, to please come forward. While they're getting situated, here's the plan for the chair. Because of the number of people who want to be involved and give comments, because we did not have the dash ones out earlier this morning, we will be carrying this over for work session, for public hearing tomorrow as well. So those who want to come in and do some public hearing at that time, so be it. If we need it, I'm just going to give you that fair warning so everyone doesn't panic today. They're going to be distributing the dash ones now. And basically, what we were waiting for was Josh isn't here yet, is he?
He's on his way out.
All right. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and let the two representatives give their comments, and then when LC gets here, we can give a little bit better overview. But knowing their time commitments and everything, representatives, whoever wants to start.
My name is Nancy Nathanson. I'm a state representative from House District 13. I very much appreciate the work that you're doing on this bill and that you're moving it forward. It's been a very important bill. In fact, I have a bill. There are several other bills, as you are aware, that have been circulating around with different ways of getting at some of the same objectives, which is not only increasing penalties but drying up the market for the theft of metal. I'd like to speak for just a couple of minutes about some of the elements that were in my bill. Some of which have been incorporated now, it looks like, into your work. And I'm very pleased because I think that these do speak to both increasing the penalties and drying up the market. One of the things that law enforcement had suggested would be of great help to them was a digital photograph of the seller with the material being sold. So that was one of the very specific points in the bill that I had developed. That's still on the books over there on the House side. Another part of it was to set up a statewide database for recording and being able to review scrap metal sales, and I understand that that would have a fiscal attached. That's one of those sorts of things that might be an idea that can't be pursued in the fiscal climate that we have right now. I want to speak just a moment to the section on disproportionate impact. I'm so pleased to see in the Dash 1 amendments that are just being distributed that there is a section on disproportionate impact. Let me tell you why I think it's very important to make sure we get this in there. In Central Eugene, there were several hundred homes that were without phone service for 2 days. That's what I consider interfering with public health and public safety when you can't communicate out. It also interferes with public health and public safety when you can't get communication in. As you're aware, people now communicate with the outside world, both to communicate outward and receive news in, by many different means. It's not just phone wires. It might be fiber optic cable. It might be copper wire. There are many different ways that people communicate now, and people are changing phone service to different sorts of utilities, for example, changing the way they use computers and televisions. So it really alarms me when I see that fiber optic communication, telephone line communication, and other sorts of cable communication have been disrupted. This is a public safety hazard. So I hope in the definition that's being developed, those sorts of things will be interpreted as interfering, creating a hazard to public health or safety. Similarly, if phone lines are down at a school, if metal is stolen from the support structure of stadium seating, that's an immediate threat to public safety. Can you imagine what would happen when several hundred fans of the young players on a school football field start to walk up and take seats in some stadium seating where the support structure has been dismantled to sell for scrap? That's similarly a threat to public safety. There was copper wire stolen from electric substations in the Lane County area. Grounding wires were stolen. If someone happened to come in contact with some part of that utility, that would have been an immediate threat and danger to their life. So grounding wires, is that an immediate threat to public safety? Yes, I think it is. So I just encourage you very much to continue the efforts that you have put forward to make sure that we take into account the disproportionate impact. I'm very pleased to see it in there and hope that as your discussions proceed that you can consider some of the other elements that have been discussed. I understand that sometimes there is a burden on one or two individuals. We're not trying to stop the sale of scrap metal. We're trying to stop the sale of stolen metal. And I want to make sure that that's very clear. When I have had some discussions in the public about this, it became very obvious that, yes, there are legitimate business needs, both on the receiving side and on the selling side. This is how people make their living. But we're trying to stop the sale of stolen metal, and I think the steps we're taking this year will help and be an important statement that we can always improve on what we set up in 2007. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Representative Kotek.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Good morning. I'm Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Thank you for allowing us to go first this morning to talk about Senate Bill 570. I'm not quite awake, my Monday morning talking here. I completely agree with the comments from the good representative from Eugene about the disproportionate impact and concur completely about having in the record or, if possible, even clarifying what we mean by public health and safety so we can be clear when this bill moves forward and we start making some decisions at the judicial level about what that means when we start law. I have seen the Dash 1 amendments. I appreciate having a chance to review them. One of the other things I'm very excited about in 570 is Section 2, the portion on page 4 in the original version that talks about the non-cash payment. I think that's an important step. I noticed in the Dash 1s we'll be moving the length of time from which a data transaction could be made from no earlier than 10 days to no earlier than 2 days. I might push that out a couple days, but if at minimum we can clarify that's 2 business days instead of just 2 days, I think that would be helpful. And I also want to thank Representatives Barker, Barton, and Olson on the House. I've been working on this and really appreciate your leadership. I think this is an important bill. I just want to say why I got involved in this, particularly obviously watched in 2007 when we really took on this issue. But going back to my district, the issue that might seem minor to some is important in my issue, which is the theft of catalytic converters. People in the span of 60 to 90 seconds sawing off your catalytic converter from the underside of your car. And the impact not only on someone's immediate daily routine, but there's really no reason unless you are someone who is an auto dismantler or auto parts dealer, to have a catalytic converter. And in my district, I have stories of folks with, you know, a dozen catalytic converters in the car pulling alongside a roadside stand that will pay them so much per catalytic converter, and off they go with cash in hand. There's no reason for folks to have catalytic converters. In fact, the EPA at the federal level even regulates them because they're an important part of pollution control in cars, but they're not really meant to be anywhere out and about except in your car. And so I have one concern. I know there's been an attempt to include catalytic converters in this bill, and I see it there, and I'm really appreciative. I have a little concern that by defining it as private metal property, and the way private metal property is included in 570 and also in the dash ones, it gives the impression that these things should be exchanged with scrap dealers. I saw the exemptions for the auto dismantlers and the motor vehicle folks. I think that makes sense. But I think it's a little overbroad in how private metal property is used here, because, again, I wouldn't want to encourage anyone to think this is something you should be selling to scrap dealers. It's an auto part, unless you're using it to either repair a car or something like that. There's really no reason for these things to be being sold at scrap dealers. So maybe we can tighten that up a bit. I'm going to talk to the folks in Portland that we've been working in and see if they have any suggestions. But I just wanted to highlight that. It's a very specific definition you've given for catalytic converters, but it might be overly broad in somehow saying this is something we should be dealing with in a scrap metal situation. So just wanted to highlight that for you. And again, thank you for working on this, and look forward to seeing additional amendments. Thanks very much.
All right, thank you. Let me just make a couple of quick comments. The issue on all of the stuff that we're working on for this bill is cost drivers as to what the fiscal is. That's why some of the different components that some of the people may want may not be included, just because of the cost drivers will keep the bill from being able to move forward, and we don't want that to happen. The disproportionate impact, that definitely will be in there in some shape or fashion. We're waiting to find out exactly what type of impact we may have depending on the sentencing that could occur, and so we may have to go up or back down on the different ratios. And regarding the catalytic converters, Josh can correct me, but I believe that might be in a a prohibition for those to actually be purchased by someone individually at the scrap metal dealers, but I'm not positive. We've worked on some different things. I'm going to let Josh go next, but first I want to see if there's any questions for the two representatives so they can move on. All right, thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you, Mr.
Josh,
Chair.
If you could just give us an overview on the dash once in summary so people that are going to be giving testimony that have had a chance to hopefully now to at least thumb through it kind of know where the dash ones are taking us from the original bill.
Sure. Good morning, Senator Prezansky, members of the committee. My name is Joshua Nasby. I'm a deputy with Legislative Council's office. I'll just walk you through the dash one amendments, mostly line by line. First five lines are largely technical. I think lines 6 and 7 add to the definition of commercial metal property, wire and a gauge that utilities use to provide electrical or telecommunication service. So that's now subject to the restrictions in the bill on commercial metal property. On line 8, that's the shortening of the period that was just referred to, within which the metal business can issue a check. That shortens the period from 10 days to 2 days. Section 6 of the bill clarifies the scope of the bill, and it exempts recycling beverage containers, as that term is defined in the bottle bill. Exempts food containers and also exempts vehicle dealers, auto dismantlers, and towing businesses to the extent they're not purchasing metal property that is not in a motor vehicle. On page 2 of the dash 1 amendments, you'll see lines 3 through 8 that clarifies that the employer, the agent of the scrap metal business, is also criminally liable for engaging in a commercial metal property transaction with a person who does not have a commercial account under the bill. Section 13 is the disproportionate impact that I think you just heard testimony about. Section 14 creates the offense of unlawfully transporting metal property. That's modeled on existing provisions in the criminal code. I know there's one for timber, for example. And so the point in Section 14 is if you're transporting metal property on the highway and you're going to a scrap metal business to recycle the property, you need to have a metal transportation certificate. And that basically just documents a source of ownership. on page 3, lines 17 through 19, it directs the Department of State Police to create a form that can be used for the metal transportation certificate. And it's a defense to this charge that the person does actually own the property. It's a Class C misdemeanor in subsection 5. Moving on to sections 15 and 16, 15 directs the district attorney in each county in which there is a scrap metal business to create a plan of action. The district attorney is directed to communicate with the business community and the law enforcement agencies to ensure that communication between law enforcement agencies and the metal businesses is ongoing in the event of theft of metal. Section 16 directs the local public safety coordinating council to review the plan in the county where a plan is created. And then finally, we've got section 17, which adds the metal crimes in the bill to the statutory provision addressing mobile tracking devices. And so it adds it to the list of crimes for which a law enforcement officer may apply for a mobile tracking device. And I think that is the quick and dirty summary.
All right, thank you. Any questions for Josh? Josh, thank you very much for making time this morning to come up and giving us the overview. And with that, thank you. All right, what we're going to do is we're going to start taking public testimony. I'm going to make a couple of suggestions. I've looked at the list. There are a couple of different groups that look like they're represented more than once. And so what the chair is going to be asking for is for those groups that are multiple listed to figure out who's going to be their spokesperson and let them testify for you. And then I know there are some lobbyists that are also signed up. And what I'm going to do for the lobby, I'm going to ask you to hold back. I want to get the public testimony for those who have traveled here, make certain they get their opportunity to be heard today so they do not have to make plans to come back tomorrow. With that, my first panel is going to be Coy Kratz, Jason Huser, and Jason, you're here, you know, in the lobbyist thing. I'm going to have you hold back too. Monty, is it Scrivener? You two will come forward, and then Tom Larson, if you all come with him, and that will be our first panel. Yeah. And what we're going to do here, I am going to run a 3-minute timer. Depending on how things are going, we may be able to open it up, but I want to make certain we get as many people that are from the public here today. And if we need a little bit more time, we'll have some flex. With that, whoever wants to get started, please identify yourself and give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Coy Kratz. I'm the Operations and Engineering Manager at Emerald People's Utility District based in Eugene. We're a member of the Oregon PUD Association. We serve 550 square miles of territory in Lane County and just over 20,000 customers. All utilities are affected in three areas by metal theft. First, safety, both for the public and our employees. Second, reliability, and third, financially. You've all had input about the financial side of the argument. I'd like to speak to you about some of the safety issues and the unintended consequences metal theft causes. First, to put things in perspective, the electric chair that was designed to put people to death at is energized at 2,400 volts. Emerald's distribution system that serves our customers is energized at 12,000 volts to ground, 21,000 volts phase to phase. Depending on the contact a person might make, 5 to nearly 10 times out of the electric chair. That will at least cause loss of a limb and at worst, death. Electricity travels at about 186,000 miles a second. You can't get away fast enough to avoid injury. No power company wants anyone hurt, regardless of the circumstances that might have caused the contact. When grounds are cut and removed from our stations or facilities in the field, it puts the public and our employees who might enter those facilities unaware of the system being disabled at great risk. That can lead to substation or primary lines being knocked out of service, and then some of the unintended consequences can take place. First and foremost, the possibility of electrocution involving a member of the public or a utility worker. Municipal water systems and people on wells lose their ability to fight fire. Schools and workplaces are sometimes closed and people sent home as the duration of the outage may not be known. Traffic light systems go out, and the possibility of major vehicle accidents that could affect you, me, or our family or loved ones are a real threat. All these issues and the possibility of countless others for what few dollars the scrap metal may garner, stolen for small profit and a quick sale. With these, as well as the broad-based issues that Metal Steph represents on behalf of Emerald's People's Utility District, the Oregon PUD Association, and other consumer-owned utilities, I would like to urge your support of Senate Bill 570. We appreciate your efforts on this front, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chairman Przanski, members of the committee, I'm Tom Larson. I'm the city traffic engineer in Eugene. Part of my duties, I'm responsible for 9,000 streetlights, 25,000 aluminum signs, and I don't even know how much guardrail. I really appreciate this bill in its broadness and addressing metal theft on many areas. Since 2007, we have been hit hardest by the theft of copper wire. We have spent over $500,000 in terms of direct costs for replacing that wire. The damage that wire theft does to public safety extends far beyond what merely the wire is. In one case, we had 165 feet of wire stolen, but that's the first 165 feet of half mile of bike path. So all of the lights downstream on that bike path went dark, over $50 worth of copper wire. Our cost to replace that was probably around $600. I think the impact has been felt most in the city on those bike paths, on those places where the lights that we're providing are the only lights that are out there. They are the lights that are closest to homeless camps. They are the lights that are the least under observation. We have had, as the price of copper has gone up and down at its highest point, we've actually had wires stolen out of street lights on streets where businesses and traffic were actually going. So, as the metal prices vary, the reward for that quick theft has increased. Whatever we can do to stop that, we support the bill, and we'll keep plugging away. I think in addition to our direct costs, we have increased service costs. We now are armoring most of our bike path lights with concrete elephants, about 1,800 pounds of concrete on the top of the access vaults. It means when we do even the simplest of repairs, we need to go out with a backhoe, we need extra equipment. We have a lot of hidden extra costs in over and above just the direct replacement costs. Again, the City of Eugene supports the bill, and we thank your efforts.
Thank you. And Monty?
Yes. My name is Monty Scribner. I represent Pacific Corp, Corporate Security. Pacific Corp serves 1.7 million customers in six western states, with over 500,000 of those customers in Oregon. We strongly support SB 570 for two key reasons. More needs to be done to deter metal theft before it occurs, and more needs to be done to help law enforcement catch thieves, and this bill addresses both of those elements. Metal theft is a growing problem in Oregon, nationally and internationally, as we are. That's why we're here. Power industry uses copper extensively in generation, transmission, and distribution because of its conductive properties. From a financial perspective, as a conservative estimate, Pacific Corps withstood more than $250,000 of loss from metal theft in 2008. Half of that theft is within the state of Oregon. Example, one theft in 2008 accounted for more than $30,000 in strictly material loss, not to mention the man hours and safety issues that come up around that. For utilities, metal theft is a real safety issue. Thieves are entering high voltage substations and areas and approaching live wires. To echo his concerns that he brought up as well, it's not only a safety issue for the public that has access, unfettered access through a hole in the fence or whatever it might be to a substation, kids going in and such after the theft has occurred.
Not to mention that, but also our crews also are exposed to unknown safety issues. By unknown, if you can go into a substation and not know that it's de-energized by the trails being cut, for instance, which is seeing a surge
in this last year. They are exposed. We're doing certain elements to paint them to take the visibility off them, but they are still getting attack, mostly because of they're exposed above ground usually. We fully support this bill, and we appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel?
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Boquist.
I apologize, I might have missed it. Estimated value of loss at Pacific Corp in a year?
Pardon me?
Estimated value of loss?
This last year, over $250,000 in material losses.
That's just material?
Rather conservative, yes.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much. My next panel is going to be Ann Gardner, Warren Rosenfeld, and then Kevin, is it Kupfinger? Kupfinger, sir. Come on up. And regarding those who have brought written testimony, the chair prefers you not reading your written testimony. You can speak from the heart, summarize it for us. All of the members here will read the testimony while the record's open. Anne, if you want to get started.
Yes, thank you, Senator Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Ann Gardner. I'm here today representing Schnitzer Steel Industries. We've been in business for Oregon for over 100 years. We recycle end-of-life scrap metal, primarily iron and steel. Senator, I'm reading from the heart.
Okay.
We also recycle over non-ferrous metals in our facilities in Eugene, White City, and Bend, and we recently suspended operations in Grants Pass due to market conditions. Metal recycling is an essential part of our society's infrastructure. Recycling metal reduces greenhouse gas emissions, it saves energy, it conserves natural resources, and it diverts millions of tons of materials away from landfills each year. A few years ago, the value of metal grew sharply, quite simply because demand outstripped supply. Included in your packet is a 2008 Institute of Scrap Recyclers Industry fact sheet, what's up with the price of scrap. Also included in your packet is the pricing trend line for copper. In 2005, the price was just less than $1.50 a pound. From 2000 to 2008, the price rose steeply, and at one point in 2008, it was slightly over $4 a pound. As a result of this sharp increase in value, metal theft became the crime of choice and overwhelmed many communities around the country.
In response to the rising incidence of metal theft, many in our industry partnered with the affected stakeholders, including utility groups, the agriculture industry, construction firms, and law enforcement.
We partnered to aggressively fight this problem. We formed the Metal Theft Coalition, coordinated by Jeff Stone from the Oregon Association of Nurseries. Speaking not just for my company, as a result of the efforts of this coalition and 2007 legislation, we invested in sophisticated surveillance equipment, improved our record keeping, got to know our customers better, and we asked tough questions when ownership was in doubt. We also dismissed employees who we found to be on the wrong side of the law. Our scrap acceptance guidelines, including our metal theft policy, are included in the materials before you. We also invested in our industry trade association, ISRI, and the Construction Industry Crime Prevention Program, both of which manage electronic theft alert notification systems. Included in your packet are step-by-step instructions on how to access the ISRI system. It works when theft is reported. As you evaluate this bill and the amendments as proposed, please consider the following. First, the price of metal between 2005 and the end of 2008 was an anomaly. Copper that was selling for $4 in 2008 is now selling for $1.50.
And I'm going to need you to summarize. Your 3 minutes are up.
Thank you. Very quickly, we believe that this proposal before you will decrease recycling, and we're concerned that the penalties proposed and the restrictions will interfere with a viable industry. And in closing, metal recycling is an important part of this community. The most important thing we can do is to strengthen the partnerships between law enforcement and recycling industry to help address the problem, and we are willing partners willing participants in that partnership. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ann. Warren?
Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Warren Rosenfeld. I'm the president of CalBag Metals, headquartered in Northwest Portland. Sometimes events are very close to home. A number of weeks ago, a discrepancy in a container shipping manifest showed up, indicating an error in its loaded weight. Reviewing our video surveillance tape, supervisors determined the wrong commodities were being loaded by an employee into the container. We ultimately learned this metal would be redirected for unloading elsewhere in town before heading to the Port of Portland. The final discharge of our metal would be for a foreign buyer who had secured warehouse space in Northwest Portland for the transloading. CalBag supervisors alerted Portland Police Employee Theft Division, produced the evidence, and an arrest was made. About 2 weeks ago, after being advised that while a conviction was highly probable given the evidence, at best, we could expect a 2-year suspended sentence with parole. The value of the metal was just under $10,000. Since the employee offered to make restitution, which included a $1,000 contribution to a charity of our choice, we agreed to the settlement. Lessons learned? Nothing beats cameras. Even the best cases can't expect incarceration, and stolen metal doesn't just go down the street to the next unsuspecting scrapyard. Nearing 100 years of being in business, we can fairly be called the experts. Expert enough to know we'll ultimately receive obsolete scrap metal, equipment, or the production remnants of manufacturing from the likes of Boeing, Intel, and other manufacturers through the legitimate pipelines of solid waste recovery and public recycling efforts, entrepreneurial recycling, and in-plant production handling programs. We aggressively, in bold letters, placard our operations, informing the public of what we will and won't buy. The attached photo says it loud and clear for all who arrive or just pass by on the street. Stop metal theft. All purchases recorded on camera. Our website advises the same, recommends safeguards to property owners, and provides links to the CICP and ISRI metal theft advisory websites. In fact, CalBag's combination of video surveillance, integrated purchase record keeping, scale purchase trading, and web-driven inter-industry theft alert programs were all initiated well before current laws were enacted in 2007. After 100 years, the moral is, we think about the future. So why is it that instead of targeting thieves, SB 570 places unwarranted blame on law-abiding businesses and provides little to no assistance to law enforcement or the direct prevention of theft or the prosecution of the thieves? In its current form, this bill is not particularly muscular. The bill fails to deter and prevent theft while imposing onerous burdens on recyclers and their legitimate customers. CalBag Metals has over 200 public customer visits per day. They include, of course, regular visits by small scrap dealers who provide pickup service and often cleanup services to the area's smaller manufacturers and fabricators, as well as demolition and construction companies, and a growing number of individual citizens who have accumulated scrap metal from do-it-yourself home remodeling, storm damage repair, or who have taken the time to clean out the garage. To expedite the process, CalBag spent over $150,000 earlier in the decade to provide a cash payment vending system.
Warren, I need you to come to a conclusion, please. We've got your written testimony. We can read the rest of it. Is there any closing statements you'd like to give to us?
I just close by saying, let's be honest, that metal theft is frustrating and horribly costly for everybody. We know that from personal experience. But SB 570, as is written, seeks merely to burden the recyclers and effectively just externalize the security costs. And in the end, we believe it'll do nothing to either impede theft or assure rightful punishment. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, Kevin.
Good morning. My name is Kevin Clevenger, and I'm representing the nursery industry today. I grew up in the nursery business, working on my family's nursery. I've managed two other nurseries as well as own currently Agribiz Solutions, a nursery consulting operation. I'm also the incoming president for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. And the main message I want to convey to you today is that metal theft has a direct impact and cost of doing business. In a 5-year period at one of the nurseries I managed, we were burglarized 3 times, along with several of my neighbors up and down the streets who were also hit. including one had an entire building stripped of the metal siding, and another one had his copper wire for his irrigation pumps stripped of the core. Not only did I have the replacement cost of the items considered during my burglary, but the threat my crops were under. One incident, I had an entire field worth of brass sprinkler head stolen one night in August. Now, during August and those extremely warm months, even a delay of a few hours in getting irrigation to those crops can severely damage, if not outright kill, that crop. When I or other nursery owners look at dealing with this threat, we usually are forced to carry more inventory of spare parts, pay more for security such as fences or cameras, or even paying additional labor to remove irrigation equipment to lock buildings on a nightly basis. This adds costs where there's not much margin, if any, to cover it. Nurseries usually are located very open and isolated locations. As such, we can be a very attractive target for thieves. And because of this, I believe we need to be included with the construction, utilities, and transportation industries. In closing, I'd like to thank you for supporting the original metal theft bill and considering Senate Bill 570 today. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone
on the panel? Thank you very much for coming forward today. My next panel is going to be Travis Terry, Troy King, and Mark, is it Gurkograph? Good morning, whichever order you'd like to go in.
I'm sorry,
whoever would like to go first.
Chairman Brzezanski, members of the committee, my name is Troy King. I'm a sergeant with the Portland Police Bureau. Been in law enforcement 20 years, 15 years of those in investigations. I first of all want to thank you and others who put so much effort into putting this bill together. It's clear that there's been a lot of energy put into this, a lot of thought, and there have been some rather important advancements, I think, made in this bill. If I could start off just by saying that in working some of these cases and being in law enforcement, it's my perspective that the recyclers are not the problem. And so I just want to first start off by saying that. The efforts that we have seen work in other areas and we'd like to see applied more in this area really is more or less a three-prong approach. And I just want to kind of go into that and share some experience in that area. There are three ways that we can address this problem. The first one, I think, has been addressed fairly effectively in this bill, and that is the area of prevention. The idea of increased penalties, of allowing certain types of metals to be more closely regulated, or explanations needing to be provided if they're purchased, the addition of the metal transport record, those are all very important pieces for prevention. In addition, the idea of not paying cash at the time when the person comes in, fantastic idea from our perspective. I'm glad to see that that's in there. The two-day reduction, however, has me a little concerned, and I'll just briefly tell you why that is. Part of the reason that we support the 10-day window versus the two-day is that gives time for the crime to be discovered. It gives time for that to be reported to the police and the police to look into the issue and potentially locate that property to recycle yard. If that process occurs and the check has already been sent and received by the thief, then the deterrent factor of that really is diminished. Not only do the recyclers lose money at that point, but really the reward has already been granted to the person who needs that money. So the 10-day window really allows time for that process to occur and the recycler to stop payment on that check so that the metal thief doesn't get his reward and the recycler is able to not suffer a loss for buying that property unknowingly. So in the prevention area, that's one area we'd like to see just some additional thought put into. The other leg of that stool that really this success rests upon, and I think you've already heard some testimony here, and you'll probably hear quite a bit more about the frustration that these crime victims experience, as well as the recyclers experience when we are able to make a case. Well, first of all, the frustration that we don't make cases, and secondly, when we do, that the prosecution doesn't really have the outcome that they hoped for. The success of that really rests on this three-legged stool, the first leg being prevention and the second leg being an investigation leg. In law enforcement, we want to be proactive with these types of cases. We really would like to identify who is out there actively selling stolen metals. Most of the customers that come into these recycle yards are legitimate people. But there is a small fraction of the society that has found their niche, and they are taking advantage of the ability to without being detected by the police, go from yard to yard and sell property. So what we really need in law enforcement is we need quick information. We need some sort of real-time reporting method or to have the recyclers mail in what their recycle records to us so that we can look at that and realize that certain people are out and about being active. That gives us a chance to stop them from victimizing further people. The last leg of that stool is the prosecution leg. And it's very frustrating for crime victims to have those cases go forward and not be prosecuted. One of the things that really helps in other cases and can help in this case is getting a thumbprint. As you all are aware, all of us are aware, metal thieves steal identities all the time and use fake ID and so on. The thumbprint has been successful in other fields of law enforcement, pawn shops, secondhand stores, and so on, and we believe that it really would help here. It also would take the liability off of the recyclers. We're expecting them to verify the ID of the person that comes in, and we're using...
Sergeant King,
yes.
I need you to wrap up, and I can
all
tell
right.
you that we've got the thumbprint is going to be on there. It will be on the back of the check. For negotiation, transaction, so it will be with the scrap metal dealer.
Okay, that's great to hear. If I could just close just one, a couple other things here. There are a few developments in the language that are in the current draft that cause us some concern that are perhaps steps backwards. It used to be or currently is that law enforcement can ask for information on a transaction and get that, but the language in the new bill requires a warrant, a subpoena, or what's referred to as a lawful demand. That gives us some concern as to really where that's going to put us in our ability to investigate these transactions. So that's an area of concern.
Sergeant, I'm going to go ahead and close you off now. We'll come back to some of the stuff that you've said. As a prosecutor, I can tell you you're still going to be able to do what you want to do with that request. If they want to honor it, so be it. If they don't, a subpoena, as I know, it can be issued pretty quickly. So,
thank you.
Whoever's next.
Good morning, Senator Prusansky and committee folks. My name is Mark Georgioff, and I'm a detective with the Portland Police Bureau. I want to take a moment to thank you for the opportunity to comment on proposed bills Senate 570 regarding metal theft and share some more ideas regarding how to best enact this new legislation. I concur wholeheartedly with what Sergeant King here on the side said. A little bit about my background. I've been a full-time law enforcement for 16 years and investigated for the last 8 of those. The last 3 I've been dedicated solely to property crimes investigations of Northeast Precinct, from oftentimes involving metal theft-related crimes. I have interviewed and arrested over 250 metal thieves spanning over 100 different criminal investigations, have written multiple related search and arrest warrants, and been plugged into the ins and outs of this devastating activity and what fuels it. It's given me a background and insight that only comes with these experiences. The frequent and significant contact that I've had with criminals who steal metal has also taught me that metal thieves fear 3 things more than anything else. 1, metal thieves fear the stop of the immediate cash flow that is currently allowed, as this would primarily drives their activity. 2, metal thieves fear their true identification being known, thus generating the practice of using false or stolen identifications, if any is used at all. And 3, metal thieves fear a trail of information and a record of their activities, allowing them to be more easily identified and associated with specific criminal activity. Now, as we look at the proposals within this, I strongly support the decision to have the no cash payment policy with the check distributed after a 10-day delay period. This is a crucial change because not only does it stop the cash flow at the transaction, but it prevents the immediate gratification or reward for these criminal activities. The 10-day of payment to a physical mailing address supports the deterrence by allowing enough time for the crime to be recognized and reported, and the metal to be identified at the recycler, and time to stop payment from the recycler to the seller of stolen metal. It also acts as an additional deterrence because a metal thief is often unwilling to give his or her physical address, knowing it will provide sufficient time and information for follow-up. This 10-day window is a win-win situation for all involved except the metal thief. I encourage you to firmly hold to the 10-day delay in payment, and in addition to non-cash payments for non-commercial, non-ferrous customers. I will conclude at this time.
Okay.
The rest of it is in the record with the information provided.
Great.
Thank you very much. And let's see, I guess this is it Travis?
Deputy Travis Terry, I'm with the Douglas County Sheriff's Office, and I'm currently a Timberlands investigator, contracted to private timber companies. In Douglas County, in regards to the metal theft, what we're finding is it's not just a small business. It impacts the forest lands more than a lot of people realize. Anywhere from logging sites, complete radiators, spools of cable that are used for these logging sites, they're taken throughout the night. And therefore, once that equipment's removed from the equipment, that company's shut down for 1, 2, 3 days until it gets repaired again. Currently, the 5th of this month, Weyerhaeuser sustained 8 gates in one area that were stolen between the hours of 8 p.m. and 4 a.m. That's a huge impact. A gate probably doesn't mean a lot to many people, but the cost of these gates are in the area of $4,500 for a complete repair. Unfortunately, in Douglas County, we don't have payment for garbage disposals. Lane County, where these gates were actually taken right on the border of Lane County, Douglas County. It's evident of me going to these sites that the gates are very important to the environment. The sites right at the gate are huge dump sites. Once that gate's removed, and the cost of the replacement of it is the garbage is going to spread immensely over the environment. Not only is that, is we need to hold the people that are taking this stuff a lot more accountable for their actions. Currently, we have in the timber lands, there's a statute that says that we shall stop and investigate firewood cutters, any of that kind of stuff. This is a very good idea to look at it, to mirror the Special Forest Products Law, is that gives us the responsibility to stop and investigate these people that are out there stealing this metal. On the way up here today, a vehicle I passed was completely full of scrap metal. We need to stop these vehicles. We need to be holding them accountable for their responsibilities of where that scrap material comes from. I do believe that it does help when the prices are high. The scrap metal does get removed from the timberlands, but we need to hold accountability on these people that are out there stealing this stuff. And it's very, very expensive to replace and repair the machinery that these metal pieces are taken from.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Chair Przanski. Just for anyone, for the whole panel, actually, would you discuss how often the apprehended thieves are successfully prosecuted? And also, after they're successfully prosecuted, how often are they incarcerated?
Sir, that is a variable based quite often on the criminal history, past record, if they're a repeat property offender and fall under that statute, if the severity of the crime merits it being an aggravated crime or not. Certainly, property crime offenders don't receive the incarceration time that person crimes do. I will say the importance of reporting crimes to law enforcement and the prosecution of these cases aid in that cumulative effect. If we have the repeat offenses, if we have the reported crimes, if we have the custodies related to those individuals, we can put a much tighter grip. The district attorney's office can have a much stronger case by showing a pattern, by showing a history, by showing the frequency that these individuals are involved with the criminal activity. When those things are in place, we then can have increased sanctions on the individuals.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I would hope that the district attorneys will weigh in on this bill before we're through.
They have, and they will.
Thank you.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a question, any one of the three officers can respond. I mean, the three key elements you pointed out here are stopping cash, identifying them, and creating a trail, which in various versions here, this all does, you know, in a two-business day period. I'm curious as what's going to happen. What is the difference between day three and day eight, in which we've stopped the cash, if you did this bill, stopped the ID'd them, thumbprints, checks, legitimate address because the check got sent there, so on and so forth like that. What's the difference between 2 days and day three and eight other than time?
Go ahead.
I thank you for asking the question, and that is a good question that has been asked. There are some strategic and deterrent reasons for having the longer delay period. One of them in particular, quite often people don't know they've been victims of metal theft till 1 or 2 or 3 days after the fact, particularly in the construction sites. We know that metal have been stolen sometime over the weekend and it's not discovered till Monday or Tuesday. Well, if they had it stolen Friday night, Saturday morning, and it was recycled Saturday morning, then the check's mailed out Monday, the person receives it, and it's cashed before oftentimes it's reported. Secondly, once it is reported, law enforcement has responsibility to try to follow up with recyclers and see if we can identify where it has been sold at. When that takes place, we can then try to match the material that's reported stolen with the material that showed up at recycler XYZ. At that point in time, we can then start following up based on the identification of who the seller was and try to do the criminal piece of that. If they have received a check or cash, as currently is, by that point, then the onus is all on the recycler either to give the metal back and take the financial loss or have the owners of the property reimburse the recycle yard for what is theirs but what has been paid out to the recycle yard. The 10-day window there allows an opportunity for the stop payment of that check. It prevents the recycle yard from taking a personal financial hit of their business. It prevents the metal thief from getting the money, and it allows a sufficient window of time for A, the crime to be reported, and B, to have follow-up done by law enforcement in the identification of what recycle yard it went to, where the material can then be recovered.
Good follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just for my own edification, so what you're saying is most recycle yards are open 7 days a week?
No, the most that, I don't know, there may be some that are open on Sunday. I would say they all primarily are open 6 days a week, and oftentimes Saturday is their biggest day of the week.
Thank you. And Deputy Terry, I just want to let you know that in the Dash 1 amendments, there is going to be the transport requirement, and also we are mirroring where you as an officer or the other officers, upon seeing a suspect vehicle, would be able to make inquiry. So I think that will be covered there. And regarding the days, we meant to have in the amendments business days, and we'll discuss whether the two business days is sufficient or do we need to go higher with that. And so trying to build in for that weekend excursion type of stuff. All right, thank you, gentlemen. Our next panel is going to be John, is it Coulter?
Yes.
And then I'm going to butcher the last name, Mike Dreixel? Drexel? Mike, I'm going to have you hang on for a second since you're, I want to make sure I get all the public people. Jay, is it Burcham? Mr. Burcham, why don't you come forward? And then Mick Doan? All right, why don't y'all come up? Is there anyone else here that wanted to give testimony today that are what I call public members versus lobbyists representing different groups? Just want to make sure we get everyone up. Gentlemen, whoever wants to go first.
All right, thank you, Chair Pozanski and members of the committee. I'm John Coulter. I'm General Manager for Fisher Farms Nurseries. We have locations in Gaston, Sherwood, and Dayton, and I'm pleased to testify today on Senate Bill 570. In an effort to not to be a continued victim of metal theft, our company has been replacing at considerable financial cost our aluminum pipe with plastic pipe at locations that we would be determining as easiest for perpetrators to steal from us. We were grateful in 2007 for the legislation that was passed by our legislators, but recognize more must be done to further decrease and hopefully eliminate metal theft. Not only is it expensive to all of us who have metal when it is stolen, it is even more critical is when it happens. Oftentimes, when we are in the middle of our irrigating season, that is when we're highly noticeable for our inventories of pipe, pumps, and wire. At temperatures of 80 degrees and higher, 4 hours of no water on our crops will most likely kill these crops. At 20 to 40,000 plants per acre, and having in excess of 300 acres, you can quickly see the millions of dollars at risk just at our company's three locations. We are simple farmers looking to you to protect our businesses and our livelihoods regarding this issue. I'm here to support the bill and advocate for the Dash 1 amendments before the committee this morning. We need to continue to give additional tools for our law enforcement and district attorneys to prosecute metal theft. It is my company's hope that at a later date, when our state's fiscal picture is stronger, that we can move to see metal theft elevated to a Class C felony and be included in the aggravated criminal mischief statutes. For until then, we can only do this, and I believe we are only applying bandages to a wound, not completely healing the wound. Fisher Farms respectfully requests that the Senate Judiciary Committee approve SB 570 as amended and work with your counterparts in the State Senate to pass meaningful metal theft legislation. The agriculture sector needs to be included with utilities, transportation, and construction since we are the big targets for metal thieves. As with environmental policy for our company, we are often asked to do a little more as a business to protect the greater good, as is with metal theft recyclers. Thank you, Chair Przanski, for the opportunity to provide testimony, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Good morning, Senator, Committee. I apologize for my voice. I hope this doesn't go towards my 3 minutes yet.
We'll bear with you.
Thank you.
Your pain.
At the risk of being misunderstood,
I need your name for the
record. Excuse me, Jay Burcham, Burcham's Metals in Albany, Oregon.
All right.
CICP Construction Institute, CICP has awarded me two different awards over the past few years, and with those awards, I have received those because of my commitment to helping law enforcement and the victim. I say that so you can see where I'm going. You have in 570, I would be penalized for buying something that I would deem suspicious, that I would deem as a possible stolen item. My track record with Linn County Sheriff's Department, Albany PD, and others in that area, I am known to buy stolen material from time to time when I deem it suspicious. Our cameras are comparable to Schnitzer's, CalBag, and others of high resolution, high definition. They're wonderful quality images. We will take the risk of purchasing something suspicious in an effort to help the victim and to help local law enforcement. Sheriff Tim Mueller has been quoted, along with Chief Ed Boyer of APD, in our local newspaper, the Albany Democrat Herald, that we have been very instrumental in curtailing metal theft in our area, Linn and Benton County, because of the stand that we take. Yes, there are times that we are not reimbursed, and it is a financial risk for us, but we have a commitment that we are concerned that the thief, the potential thief, would take this material to someone who is not compliant, to someone that has not been inspected by law enforcement, and that recycler would purchase and not report. So rather than sending that person on, we gather that information, our high-resolution images, as well as burning off onto a disk the entire transaction, and we can give that to law enforcement. It speeds up their investigation. They're able to go on and help others in the community faster, quicker, because of the tools that we give them. They're very appreciative. I would like to see us consider going to a $25 cash limit rather than a cashless. The reason I say that is because If a person is given a check for $10 and they go to a local bank, they often, if they do not have an account with that bank, they will be charged $5. We are to, as Oregonians, we should encourage recycling. The metal thieves that we're talking about here, and the victims that are representing many companies seated behind me, these people are thieves that are bringing in hundreds of dollars with material, as a rule, not a small amount. But, Senator, if you were cleaning up your own garage or around the back of your house, you would definitely have an account at the bank. You would not be concerned about that. I just do not want to impede the honest citizen that is trying to just do some basic recycling. But we, as a group, are inconveniencing the citizen. I have more at a later date, I hope, but thank you.
That'd be great. If you want to put stuff in writing and submit it to the committee, that would be fantastic. We'll be working on this bill for some time.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Jim?
I'm Mick Doan from R.S. Davis Recycling. Thank you, Senator Brzezinski and the committee. As we're in Clackamas, Oregon, and in the important area, scrapyards, say 99% of them, including us, are in compliance with most of the things in this bill. Referring back to 2007, many yards have installed these cameras that Jay was talking about, and we've provided that information to law enforcement whenever we've been notified of any type of theft or anything like that. And we're sympathetic to the safety costs and just costs of material being stolen from other businesses, as we're the victim of this crime as often as we are the one purchasing the material. Our view at R.S. Davis is that we need more enforcement. I've passed out this my information up to you, and it shows that less than 1% of the people that have come through our door have been even reported to be thieves. And we provided information. We spent hours in court only to have a lot of these guys show up the next day after they're convicted. I mean, only three of them have been convicted. But one of them, I testified at 10 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, he was trying to sell metal. So there's really no consequences. That's our point here. We'd like to see stronger enforcement of the laws that are already on the books. The metal recyclers in the Portland area, at least, have an informal do not buy list. We participate in that. Somebody comes in, they're a known criminal. We don't buy from them. Clackamas County asks us not to buy from somebody, we don't buy from them. We're doing what we can that way. We just think that the criminals need to be prosecuted instead of the businesses. As far as cash payment, that was a concern of ours, because a lot of times, like Jay had mentioned, the cost of doing that is more than the person will get out of the metal. Say half the transactions that we do are under $100 every day. You know, whether that's a guy cleaning out his backyard, he gets $10 for gas. That's all he's doing, is just cleaning up his backyard. Or maybe it's a retired guy, does a little bit for a few extra bucks. That's pretty much what I can say about that.
Thank you very much. Let me see if there's any questions here. Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. What percentage of business that you gentlemen do is repeat customers versus you know, the one or two person that walks in off the street?
The 90% is repeat business.
That's a high percentage, yes, sir. 70? 70% probably.
All right, gentlemen, thank you again. I'm going to ask one more time. Is there anyone else here who wanted to give testimony that is what I'm calling public members of the, as compared to someone that's here as a representative of a organization or group?
with that, I'm going to go ahead and conclude today. We're at 10 o'clock, and as I mentioned at the beginning of this hearing, that I was going to entertain the carrying this over for a public hearing. I am going to do that. Now, for the lobbyists that are here that did not get to testify, some of you actually had members here testifying, so you may want to weigh as to how much you need to bring forward. The record's still open as to taking in additional public written testimony, and I do expect that based on what we've heard today, as well as some other input that we expect to receive, that there'll be some modifications to the dash one. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and conclude today by carrying over Senate Bill 570 till tomorrow at 8:30. And Council, is there anything else we need to take care of today?
Yeah.
And with that, I'm going to conclude for today. But before I do, I want to thank everyone for, one, being here, two, participating. And I apologize, we didn't have the dash ones out when we first opened up.